Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It is Wednesday, July 17, 2013. The spooks are back on Capitol Hill, spinning up a storm and dropping a few little bombs. We've got the details in our News and Comment podcast, sponsored by listeners and by GoDaddy.com.
I don't like music.
And we begin with a technical apology. The last couple of days, some of our regular listeners who use iTunes to grab the podcast from peterbcollins.com have not received them. And we've done some investigation. We'd like to blame the NSA, but we think the problem is with Yahoo Pipes. That's the system we use to feed our podcast from our world headquarters here over to the iTunes desk, wherever it is. I guess it's in Belgium or somewhere offshore. At any rate, our technicians are working feverishly to reestablish that link, and we do apologize for any inconvenience to you. On Capitol Hill today, the guys from the NSA and one woman from the Justice Department hit a bit of a buzzsaw as they tried to explain the programs, some of which were recently disclosed or revealed by Ed Snowden's leaks. John Conyers, a former hero of mine who's kind of fading in his later years, regained some of his old gusto. And he argued that the collection of telephone metadata under Section 215 of the Patriot Act can amount to a Fourth Amendment violation before any use is made of it. You've already violated the law, as far as I'm concerned, he told witnesses. I am very uncomfortable about using aggregated metadata on hundreds of millions of Americans, Conyers added. This is unsustainable, it's outrageous, and it must be stopped immediately. Well, that was echoed by James Sensenbrenner. We haven't done the DNA test, but he claims paternity for the Patriot Act. And he warned that if they continue to abuse the law, he said it's got to be changed, and you've got to change how you operate 215, or you're not going to have it anymore. Now, unfortunately, they extended the Patriot Act by 5 years, and I think the expiration date is 2015 or 2016. There'll be a lot of water under the bridge between now and then. One of the great Democrats from California, Zoe Lofgren, concurred with Sensenbrenner. I think very clearly this program has gone off the tracks legally and needs to be reined in. Under 215, the NSA is allowed to collect telephone company records that include the number that was dialed, the date and time of the call, and the length of the call. And a man named Cole, let me look up his first name here. Cole is from the NSA. He's the Deputy Attorney General, James M. Cole. And listen to this flat-out lie. He said the collection includes the number that was dialed, the date and time of the call, the length of the call. They do not include names or other personal identifying information. Well, that doesn't matter. Everybody knows that your phone number is easily traceable to who you are and where you are. And it's just bullshit for them to try to mollify us by saying, oh, you know, we're just getting the metadata, just the bare-bones information. Because from there, they have many different ways, as we'll discuss in just a moment, to do one hop, two hops, or three hops, and collect quite a bit of information. But the ballsiest comments came from Stuart Baker, a former NSA general counsel, who fatuously stated that if these programs had been in effect, that the FBI might have prevented 9/11. And that is such a big lie, because we know from various whistleblowers, including Russell Tice, including from the NSA, other individuals who have told us, like Bill Binney, that the surveillance programs were deactivated before 9/11 because of internal struggles at that agency and the lack of coordination between NSA, FBI, CIA, produced a comedy of errors. They had the information. We have Colleen Rowley calling from Minneapolis saying, hey, there's a guy in a flight school here who doesn't even want to learn how to land. All of those warnings were ignored. for this guy to come up on the Hill and say that massive surveillance of American citizens would have prevented 9/11 when the information was right under their noses and they failed to act and they have never been held accountable for it? Can you tell that it raises my blood pressure? There are now two ways that you can support the Peter B. Collins Show. As you know, we accept subscriptions from listeners, and you can take one out anytime at peterbcollins.com. Starting with a dollar for a 24-hour pass, $5 a month, you can cancel anytime, or our annual subscription bargain at $50. And there's another way you can support me, and that is by doing business with GoDaddy.com, our new sponsor. GoDaddy has the best deals on domain name registration and web hosting. I've been doing business with GoDaddy for over 10 years, and I've always gotten great service. Right now, if you sign up for web hosting with unlimited storage and bandwidth, starting at as low as $1.99 a month, you'll get your domain name free. To get a special deal that also supports the Peter B. Collins Show, follow the GoDaddy link in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. That's important. For me to get credit, you have to use that link. And today, I'll throw in an extra 10% off web hosting, which is just amazing given their already low prices. So follow that link at peterbcollins.com and do some business with our sponsor, GoDaddy.com. Now, I just related to you the Judiciary Committee hearing in the House about the NSA surveillance program underway today. That was from the Washington Post. And I went to the Guardian website to get a different perspective. And sure enough, there's information in the Guardian story on the very same hearing that the Washington Post did not think was newsworthy. And I commend Spencer Ackerman, who recently went to work for the Guardian. Previously, he was at Wired Magazine. And he does have a real affinity for technical issues. And he led his story with the disclosure that came from John Inglis, deputy director of the NSA, about what we'll explain in a moment, the ability to do a second or third hop query through its collections of telephone data and internet records in order to find, they say, connections to terrorist organizations. Now, here, hops is not about brewing microbeer. It refers to a technical term indicating connections between people. A three-hop query means that the NSA can look at data not only from a suspected terrorist, but from everyone that suspected person communicated with, and then everybody that those people communicated with. And if you understand how a network expands outward in this manner, then a lot of people get caught up in a dragnet who have no connection to the alleged suspect. He called his dry cleaner. He called the car repair shop. And those kind of people are drawn into the same investigation as people who might actually have communicated him with him in a more meaningful way. And so the Washington Post chose not to reveal public testimony on Capitol Hill about the three-hop capability of the NSA. And this exponentially expands their ability to identify and track individuals. And, of course, we got the usual spin from these agency insiders. They say that these surveillance activities are restricted by the oversight of Congress and the FISA court. But then we get Congressman Spencer Baucus, who says, as a member of Congress, he was not aware at all of the extent of the surveillance since the NSA programs were briefed only to the intelligence committees of the House and Senate. And here I inject my question of the week. Russell Tice told us flatly that Senator Feinstein was wiretapped. She's chair of the Intelligence Committee. Does she know she was wiretapped? And does she care? Does she feel that Spencer Baucus and other people were fully briefed and exercising oversight when they say, I don't know nothing about this and I couldn't have exercised oversight without knowledge? And Zoe Lofgren, who we mentioned earlier, a Democrat from San Jose, revealed that an annual report provided to Congress by the government about the phone records collection is less than a single page and not more than eight sentences. How can you have full oversight if there isn't full disclosure? These are the games being played on Capitol Hill today. Meanwhile, in Washington, Judge Reggie Walton, who's a true Neanderthal, nevertheless managed to issue a good ruling in federal court, the D.C. Circuit, today. He also sits on the FISA court. And Walton issued a ruling on Monday ordering disclosure of the suit that Yahoo brought against the NSA back in 2008 and that led to a court decision. And we are expected to have it declassified and partially published around the end of August. Meanwhile, and I want to offer a shout-out for the news tip to Shahid Buttar, Executive Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, who shared with me yesterday that the Electronic Frontier Foundation is representing the First Unitarian Church of Los Angeles in a lawsuit against the NSA. The heart of the case is the bulk telephone records collection program that was confirmed by the FISA court and, well, by actually the disclosure by Ed Snowden of the order. The Director of National Intelligence confirmed the formerly secret document was authentic. So what EFF is concluding here is that its clients do have standing to sue the government over the collection of this information. And this is a very interesting First Amendment issue. They are arguing that this spy violates the First Amendment right to association and express political views as a group. And, of course, this is something I fully support, and we will follow its progress in the courts. Today, we release an in-depth interview with journalist Russ Baker, an independent reporter who publishes at his own website, whowhatwhy.com. And in our in-depth interview, we talk about the lingering and serious questions and contradictions related to the April 15th bombing at the Boston Marathon and the subsequent investigation. It is amazing just how convoluted and incoherent the official narrative is, and yet the corporate media in this country barely lifts a finger to examine it. Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Russ Baker.
As far as the situation in Florida, the attempt to suppress information is all across the board. We're finding, my reporting team at whowhatwhy.com is finding that at every turn we're being blocked from getting things that you used to be able to get, police reports you used to be able to get routinely. We are now told everywhere that they can't be released because there's an ongoing investigation, but actually there could be an ongoing investigation along with them releasing these things. There's no reason they can't release a coroner's report, a police report, or anything else. And it's absurd to think that we don't have a right to it. What they're basically trying to do is they're trying to sew the whole thing up so they can just have a very quick trial and be done with it, and they do not want any kind of public scrutiny or any kind of discussion. And I think that signals that there is something going on here, which is not just a normal investigation and prosecution, that in fact they have deep concerns about things that could come out.
You can hear the full interview. It's available for subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. And among other things, with Russ Baker, we discuss the brouhaha over the new cover of Rolling Stone magazine with Dzhokhar Tsarnaev's picture on it. In Boston, the mayor and others are calling for suppression of this because it might annoy or offend people. And also, we learned from the Boston Globe today that the FBI has ordered the coroner in Florida not to release an autopsy report about the mysterious death on May 22nd in Orlando of a friend of the Tsarnaev brothers named Ibrahim Todeshev. And we have covered this this very unusual case before. There was an FBI agent, two Massachusetts State Police officers, who went to Todashev's apartment. They interviewed him. They apparently were pressuring him to sign a confession to participation in a murder of three men in Waltham, Massachusetts in 2011. And then we only have official leaks and reports to go on, but they tell us that Todashev came after the FBI agent. The story shifts, whether it was a sword, a blade, a metal pole, a broomstick. I mean, it's just all over the place. And we're told that the coroner can't release his findings because the FBI is conducting an investigation. Well, it's conducting a whitewash, because since this event, studies show that in the last 10 or 15 years, every event of FBI use of force resulting in a fatality has been claimed to be justified, even in cases where they paid out money damages to a survivor of one of these attacks. It is just mind-boggling that the FBI, of course, can do no wrong. It's always above reproach. Yesterday was historic in the United States Senate. And up to a point, I give Harry Reid credit, because he bluffed the Republicans into ending their blockade of the nomination of Richard Cordray to head the new Consumer Protection Agency that was created by the Dodd-Frank law. The vote was 66 to 34. His nomination has been on hold for over 2 years, and it really is gridlock intentionally thrown up by Republicans of the lowest order. And to break that gridlock, the Democrats resorted to a kind of brinksmanship approach, threatening the nuclear option. And while they had to give up on two nominees to the National Labor Relations Board, the Democrats did prevail in persuading Republicans to give up or down votes, and Cordray's was the first. But the ability to blackmail with the threat of filibusters continues, unchecked. And we've seen that Republicans, particularly those in the House, are willing to take our entire country to the brink to prove some political, petty, or philosophical point. And so, while I applaud this result, the Democrats didn't fix the problem, and it will be back. You can just about bet on it. Meanwhile, when you compare the 2-year stall to prevent Richard Cordray from taking over at the Consumer Protection Bureau, which was really an effort to sink the whole Office of Consumer Protection, look at the way the Senate Committee, Foreign Relations, is treating the nomination of Samantha Power to be Obama's new ambassador to the United Nations. It is a cakewalk. A few uncomfortable questions. She's had to backpedal on some of the things that she wrote over the years. But this is an opportunity to examine foreign policy issues that are in play right now. In the article I'm holding right now from the New York Times, there is no reference to Ms. Power being questioned about Syria. And we're told that she and Susan Rice, the so-called humanitarian hawks in the administration, pushed very hard to provide arms to rebel groups in Syria, which is a really terrible policy position to take. And yet, the Foreign Relations Committee doesn't appear to be touching on that at all. Instead, they trotted out some of her old writings and tried to embarrass her. Power vowed to fight within the United Nations against what she called unacceptable bias and attacks against the State of Israel. Oh, come on. Yes, she's pledging allegiance to the Zionist extremist in Israel. She went on saying she would absolutely press for Israel to be given its first rotating seat on the United Nations Security Council. And then she was asked by Senator Marco Rubio of Florida about an article she wrote in 2003 in which she argued for a historical reckoning with crimes committed, sponsored, or permitted by the United States. In the New Republic, she wrote, "A country has to look back before it can move forward. Instituting a doctrine of the mea culpa would enhance our credibility by showing that American decision-makers do not endorse the sins of their predecessors." Well, I happen to agree with that sentiment, but she just denied. Well, she didn't deny she said it, but she walked away and sidestepped these issues. So it's fascinating to me that Republicans would invest more than 2 years to block a nomination to try to protect Wall Street. But for the agency across town, the United Nations, no tough questions, no real demands for explanations of administration policy from this nominee. Well, as you may know, I'm not the biggest fan of Obamacare. I wanted to see Medicare for All, a single-payer system, which I think just makes much more sense and would bring true economies to the coverage of virtually all Americans. But I have to say, it's pretty tantalizing what we're hearing. The rates in California that are quoted from the exchange that is being developed right now are below current market. And on average, in New York State, the projection is that rates will fall by half. They give the example of an individual in New York who pays more than $1,000 a month for coverage will be able to get health insurance for as little as $308 a month, and with federal subsidies for low-income individuals, the cost can be even lower. Now, this is one of my gripes, that the way the law is structured, it doesn't put any brakes on price increases of underlying health services, and therefore the insurance rates keep going up. And we will see a year from now if these rates quoted are real. But I have to say, I'm paying almost $800 a month myself right now. And if I could get a break down to $300 a month, I'll take back all those mean things I've said about Obamacare. I've been saying mean things about the Public Utilities Commission here in California. I call it a patsy agency for failing to regulate the state's big utilities like the rogue utility Pacific Gas and Electric. And as you may know, PG&E blew up a gas pipeline. Well, they didn't blow it up. It accidentally blew up in San Bruno, taking 8 or 9 lives, destroying 38 homes. And there's been a whole public debate over how to penalize the utility for its failings. And they are massive, and in some cases, intentional. And as we've told you, there was a move afoot at the PUC to order PG&E to repair and upgrade and make more safe its pipeline system. But they weren't going to fine the utility. They were going to add what was called a penalty. But the penalty would simply be to pay for these repairs and upgrades. Well, that didn't fly, and I'm glad it didn't. Now, the package is about the same. $2.25 billion is what PG&E will be ordered to pay. And $300 million of that is an actual fine. All that money comes from shareholders, not ratepayers. That's the right solution. It's now just a recommendation at the PUC, and I hope that the full commission will approve it promptly. And I've never commented on this story before because it's extremely local. Right here in sunny Marin County, California, in the area where I live, we had a guy running the Ross Valley Sanitary District. And because home prices are so steep here in California, and particularly in Marin County, the agency granted Brett Richards, the executive director or general manager of the agency, a $350,000 loan to be used for purchasing a house. Well, he took the money, he never bought a house, and when confronted about that, he resigned and left the state. It took them a while to file criminal charges to demand the money back. And on July 11th, Brett Richards was arrested in the town of Moalboal on the island of Cebu in the Philippines. Now, I've got a lot more investigation to do here. But it turns out Brett Richards was in the Philippines without an American passport, and they may be able to simply deport him to the United States without an extradition process. But we're told that the FBI got involved. They issued an unlawful flight to avoid prosecution warrant under the Federal Fugitive Felon Act. And what I want to know is if, in a kind of vanilla crime caper like this, all right, this is grand theft. He's not a terrorist. He simply happened to run away to another country. And I want to find out, and I will attempt to, the extent to which our expansive post-9/11 international dragnets were used to capture Brett Richards. Because if so, it represents the kind of mission creep that I have great concerns about. That we pass laws and expand budgets to try to protect us from terrorism, but in fact, the money and the legal authorities are used for other purposes. And I want to see this guy brought back. He's got some money that indirectly belongs to me. But not at the cost of subverting constitutional rule. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. I always appreciate your responses. Drop me a line, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until